showtime, folks!
Ooh, so this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
Well, happy start to your week, everyone. Live from the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, it's your Monday edition of Overtime. Clocking in right here after 6 o'clock on your Monday. Another rainy day out in East Tennessee. Breaking news forecast. More rain! Almost need the sound drop of Ollie, the weatherman from Family Guy.
It's gonna rain.
It's gonna rain! I feel like I need that constantly here. But we're in here. We're drawing the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, taking you up until 8 o'clock on your Monday evening. I'm Tanner Carson. I've got Tucker Holt up manning the boards in the producer's perch. Two-man show this evening. Plenty over this loaded weekend to tackle here. But first and foremost, Tucker, happy Monday. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Doing well. My lazy days are over. I had a jam-packed day today. My last two were... The last two shows we did, my lazy days were taken for granted.
Yeah, about time you did something.
I missed them dearly, really bad.
Well, we're glad you're putting in the work, okay?
We're glad you're grinding
over here for sure. And, yeah, man, I wouldn't say I'm in like recovery mode from yesterday. My voice isn't as gone as I thought it would have been. The ringing in my ears stopped this morning.
There you go.
I was in Asheville, North Carolina last night. The Harris Cherokee Center right there in downtown Asheville took me in a little Sturgill Simpson and Tyler Childers. Oh, buddy. That was everything I expected it to be and a whole lot more. It was fantastic.
You're getting me hyped up.
I'm trying my best to hype you up because I know you're going Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
And people might be wanting to know. It's like, well, Tanner, they're coming to Knoxville 2 days for 2 days straight in the middle of this week. Why didn't you just go to Knoxville show? Because I'd rather go to a concert like that on the weekend. Even if it's a Sunday night, still the weekend.
Fair point.
Me and my buddy had time to spend a good amount of time going around Asheville. It's an interesting place.
I don't think I've ever been in Asheville.
It is, I don't know how to exactly describe it. A lot of it will remind you of Knoxville, like if you go around downtown Knoxville. But it's definitely, there's more there.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if this makes sense. Like, it's not bigger, per se. Like, it's not, like, a much bigger city. But there's definitely more there. It's aesthetically different.
It's just more packed.
It's weirder.
Weirder.
It's, I'm just going to be honest. There's a whole lot of hipsters there.
Ah, okay.
And you can tell by just the stores you pass and just, you can just tell it's different than Knoxville.
Their vibe's off.
Knoxville, I mean, every city has the hipster crowd. They got the weird crowd. All of Asheville is weird. It's a very weird place. I enjoyed it, though. Those guys can brew some beer.
Oh, really?
They can brew some beer in Asheville, North Carolina. Okay. So I went to a couple local joints there pre-show. It was fine. Went to the show and then just got my face melted off, basically.
You're getting me excited, man.
Tyler Childers, he for an opener, he played almost an hour and a half.
So he goes long?
He plays like a full set list.
I love it. Okay. I was worried about that because since he's the opener, I was worried he wasn't going to play much.
He's less of an opener, more of a special guest.
Just like a co-headliner?
Pretty much. I mean, it's Sturgill's tour for sure, yeah. But like obviously Tyler is a big deal of it. Then you get a little break. Sturgill comes out, and it's I saw him 4 years ago at the Tennessee Theater when he was still pretty much straight-up country, even though he had blended, like, psychedelic country. Like, the album at that time was, like, a country, like, soul type of thing because he had, like, a horn section with him. Last night was completely different. It's gone full rock for this thing, man. Four-piece outfit out there. It's him on guitar and vocals. His bass player, his drummer, and he's got a keyboard dude.
Ooh.
Which is really nice.
Awesome.
Doing arrangements of his past country songs and rock versions. And he played for over 2 hours.
Sweet.
So I never expected to leave a Sturgill Simpson show with my ears ringing, but that's what I did last night. Had a great time. Got back to Johnson City, where I was staying over with my friend at like a not an unreasonable hour. And yeah. And now I'm back here. I spent my little time in the Tri-Cities. Got my pals, of course.
Of course. Of course. You go. Yeah.
Got to experience the culture of Asheville. And now I'm back here. So pretty hectic Sunday for me. After I had a chill Saturday. Well, I say chill because I had to start off with Tennessee basketball. Which, oh God, let's go ahead and unpack it. That sucked.
Thankfully, I only got to watch most of the first half.
You should be very thankful because I watched it all.
See, I was blown away whenever I watched. I'm trying to think. It was not long because I had things going on. And I think one of the last things I remember is I just remember being annoyed by the fan, who, of course, everybody knows was shouting terrible things.
That jackass.
That made me, like...
I bet you that jackass can't locate Uruguay on a map.
He don't even know where it is.
But he doesn't even know it's in South America. Give me a break. But yeah.
What an idiot.
Very annoying.
Yeah. Like, right around then, I stopped watching because I had to resume what I was doing. And then later, I see that we blew a 17-point lead.
We sure did, Tucker. We sure did. I sat there and I watched us have just a fantastic first half, which was even more surprising by the fact that you had your best player, John Fulkerson, on the bench the last 17 minutes of the first half in foul trouble.
He was on the bench 17 minutes?
He got in quick foul trouble.
I know we got the first two fouls.
He didn't play the rest of the first half.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't get to finish. He never went in?
Here's the thing. No. Here's the thing. It was working without him.
Yeah.
You know why it was working? For... Thank you, just the powers that be. Jordan Bowden showed up, and he looked like that killer type of assassin that we thought we might have gotten all season. He finished with a career-high 28. He was fantastic in the first half. I mean, he was fantastic the entire game. It was the first time in forever he's put together two really good halves. So he was working great. E-Pons was working great. I mean, everything was just flowing well. Go in that locker room, 8-point lead. You withstand an initial barrage by Auburn to open up the second half because adjustments are going to be made. They're going to put the pressure on you. You're playing down there. You withstood that. You built that lead up to 17. And then after the under 12 media timeout, everything just, well, it just went off a cliff. Just completely off a cliff. And everyone's going to immediately think of that 18-0 run that Auburn went on. And I feel like we're kind of recycling talking about post-South Carolina. It's, well, we're going to hark on this one main issue which caused the loss, but there's obviously, it's multifaceted. Man, it's that 18-0 run is what did it. It's what really did it, because even though, guess where, did you still eventually respond, get some baskets? You had a slight lead later in the game. Sure, could you have been in position to win the game near the end? Sure, you could have as well, but Auburn going on a run like that, and whether you believe in momentum or not, they definitely had momentum after that.
Yeah, that's just deflating.
It flipped the entire switch. It made them so much more comfortable because we had put Auburn completely out of their comfort zone. They looked like a total mess for most of that until Everything just slipped around. And you go on that 18-0 run, the first thing you do have to acknowledge is the fact that besides media timeouts, Rick Barnes didn't stop the game. Kept all those timeouts in his pocket. He also had the comment right after the game where he basically said, yeah, I didn't call it because, well, our team can't execute out of a timeout anyway.
Yeah, I saw that. You can't say that. And then didn't he say that he saved those timeouts so that later in the game he would be able to draw up an inbounds play or like a play out of the time? Like, he contradicted himself.
If you don't think they can execute plays you draw up, doesn't that have to go back on the coaching staff as well? Like, I almost feel like I'm just yelling at a brick wall when I'm I get upset at things Rick Barnes does in game because he's at this point in his career where he's not going to change anything. He's just not going to change anything about his in-game philosophy. So I feel like it's almost a lost cause. That doesn't mean I can't still be annoyed by it. Because it doesn't matter if you think that, oh, you wouldn't have been able to execute something out of a timeout. Man, you doesn't... I'm not a coach. I get that. Does it not make sense to stop the bleeding?
Stop the run.
Does it not make sense to at least... let your guys get some Gatorade in them. Take a breather.
Calm them down.
That's the main thing, because during an 18-0 run, you turned the ball over 5 straight offensive possessions. You need let some time be taken to let people just take a breath. I mean, it didn't happen. It was like being thrown to the wolves out there. And to make another animal analogy here, Auburn was almost like a shark who had just saw a bunch of seals in the water. And they were just pouncing. They were just all over. And then that's what ended up costing you. That is what mainly ended up costing you. 24 turnovers, period, is also not going to help you. But a lot of those were a result of that run, though. And I know the coaches don't turn the ball over. I also get that. I think it's obviously ignorant to blame everything on Rick Barnes. This team has had a lot of problems that we've seen since the season started. We know about this. But at the same time, man, for clearly a lot of this to be on some coaching malpractice and for that not to be acknowledged by the coaches themselves, it irks me a little bit.
Yeah.
It just irks me a little bit. And, man, Tucker, you should be lucky that you were busy in the aftermath of the game. Twitter was not a fun place to be.
Oh, no, I saw the angry Twitter.
When you see, I mean, just the biggest rift between your solid anti-Barnes camp and your pro-Barnes camp. I mean, it just split completely.
Nobody was happy. Everybody was angry, extremely. No matter if you're defending Barnes, you're mad that people are attacking Barnes. And if you're attacking Barnes, you're mad because people are somehow defending not calling a timeout on an 18-0 run.
There's been a lot of people, and I think it's warranted too, if you were going to have instances like Saturday in which you can most definitely blame coaching on the outcome of a game, there's been a lot of people since the whole post-UCLA flirting, in which not only it's not that fans were angry because he talk to UCLA. It's the fact that, remember what he said after that, though. Straight up told everyone, yeah, if UCLA could get their finances right and get my buyout, I'd be in Los Angeles right now.
Yep.
I've been at the camp since that happened that, okay, I appreciate the honesty. Because don't we always want the coaches to be honest? We had to sit through 5 years of Butch Jones being a snake oil salesman. We've had to sit through the lies. We've had to sit through the spin machine all the time. So, yeah, I actually applaud Rick Barnes' honesty. But of that same token, I started to say, okay, now, since you're going to come out and be honest like this about pretty much just being a mercenary as a head coach, we're giving you this money, that means, hey, it's more fair game when you don't live up to your contract. It's going to be more fair game for criticism.
Yeah, it can be honest both ways.
And you've had a lot of people just waiting to pounce on him since he made those comments. And you know what? I don't feel bad for the dude. I don't feel bad for Rick Barnes.
No.
Now, you can be whatever camp you want to, but it's just... it's just been a rough year, man.
It's not been fun.
It's just been a rough year, and if you thought that the post-game reaction on social media, and Lord, I don't even know what was some voluntary reaction. I didn't want to hear anything about
ugly.
The game after it. It's probably not good. It's probably not good, all happy campers or anything like that. If you thought that was bad, just wait until next season if he underachieves with next year's roster.
Ugh.
People will be out for blood.
Yeah, it'll make this look like nothing.
You're going to be out for blood, which, again, I'm trying to be as nuanced as I can here. I can admit that, man, things are just – sometimes seasons just don't go your way. We do have a really good basketball coach in Rick Barnes, And he's not been dealt a great hand this year. But you could also say, well, how much of that is his fault in recruiting a few cycles ago? But at the same time, it's just, it's been a lot of bad luck. Lamonte Turner, you know, bad luck. You've had to, you know, try to salvage this team with the two midseason enrollees. One of them has definitely not panned out the way he thought he was going to.
Yeah.
Urosh. You've had one of your other senior supposed to be alpha leaders have a gigantic slump, but then he came out of it Saturday. At least I hope he's come out of it. At least I hope it's not a one-time thing. There's so much to unpack. But, man, you have to criticize Barnes for Saturday. You just have to. You can't take those timeouts don't carry over to the Arkansas game.
No, you can't take them with you.
They just don't. He's just set in his ways. It was frustrating. And you know why a lot of it's frustrating? It's because you lost to Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, that's the cherry on
top. A lot of it hurts less if it's not to Bruce. So we'll hit this first break. We'll get to more of this when we come back from this short break here. We are with you until 8 o'clock tonight. If you'd like to call, weigh in on Tennessee basketball, any other topic that is on your mind, call 865-546-8200, 546-8200. Catching this first break, more of Overtime after this. Rick Barnes has press conference today prior to tomorrow night's matchup at Arkansas. Is it – does that sound weird in saying that I feel like we'll, like, pretty much – I think we can win that one. And not can win that one. I think we probably will win that one. It's just been a weird season. It's just been a weird team.
Yeah, it's definitely a season where, like, all bets are off. Like, you can kind of – you know, there's no guarantees in anything. I could see it.
Trying to talk about Auburn's momentum shift here today at the press conference. Barnes said, we talk about execution and not just on the offensive end when things aren't going well for you and momentum is changing. Oftentimes, it goes back to your defense where you get spread out and not doing the same things you were doing earlier. On the offensive end, you still have to make shots. You have to execute. You cannot turn the ball over. And if you turn the ball over, it's going to fuel that momentum. Talk about ball security a lot, and when you start turning down shots, normally things don't turn out well for you. With 2 minutes to go in the second half, it's a tie game, and I think if you go on the road this time of year against talented teams, you have to take that every time. But then you have to find a way to close the game out, and to do that, we need not just one or two guys playing well. We need everybody playing well and doing what we need them to do. He goes on to talk about Ballin and Fulkerson a little bit here, but basically he's saying it's beyond just calling the timeout, and I guess is what he's trying to get at there.
I just don't see how calling one of those two you took home would hurt that.
He was asked on if the makeup of his team determines whether he calls a timeout. Barnes said, yes, absolutely, you can call timeouts, but when you come out of the timeout and you don't execute, then why does it matter? So he's not walking back what he said Saturday. Why would he? You don't expect him to do that. Barnes said, I just know that at this time of the year, at any level of basketball, that you have to have tough, hard-nosed, seasoned guard play because that's what it's going to come down to. So you have to have it. You're going to have guards that can make some plays. They're going to have to handle the ball correctly, make the right decisions. They're going to have to get your team organized. When you come out of the timeout, it's up to the guards to know exactly what they're doing, and we just have been really inconsistent there. So he's going back to the point that, hey, we haven't been consistent with our guard play. They're still making mistakes whether or not we call a timeout. So he was saying, you know, what was still the use? And if you're a coach, I'm trying to take today in the aftermath of this as nuanced as I can here. I kind of understand what he's saying, and I'm also just trying to put myself in a veteran coach's shoes like that. But I still, Tucker, with all the timeouts you still had, during that run after the under 12, what was it going to hurt?
I just
don't know the logic of what it was going to hurt. Maybe you did believe in your heart of hearts that, hey, it might have not have mattered if we still didn't execute. Okay, but hey, man, stop the bleeding.
Yeah, it almost sounds like he's just like frustrated with the guys and he wasn't going to give them a timeout because they had been playing bad. And he was one of those just, you know, stop the bleeding yourselves. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but just the way he's talking about how, just like talking about how they're, you know, not being efficient with their, you know, with their offense and all this, and they're bad at inbounds plays and all this, and like putting it on them, and that's why I didn't do it. He seems frustrated.
I mean, everything's been frustrating here.
Yeah, you can't blame him.
Guard play overall wasn't excellent on Saturday. I mean, you had Vescovi shooting himself in the foot with his foul trouble. He was also getting benched after having some pretty bad turnovers. He still can't find a way to completely get over having some of the bad turnovers. Now, when you're a ball handler, it's going to be very hard to just have a turnover-free game all the time. It's going to happen. It's basketball.
Yeah.
You're playing not as aggressive of an Auburn defense as last year, but they're still solid. They still have really talented guards out there. And, yeah, I get Vescovi wasn't on his A game. But, I mean, Jordan Bowden had a career game scoring. I mean, at that point, I would trust him to try to create something out there, even though you did see a common theme in what you've had in some of these games where you can't put away teams. You'll get very timid on your offensive possessions. You'll pretty much dribble the ball around for 25 seconds and then be like, oh, crap, we have to make a shot happen. But still, yeah, with Bowden and just feeling it, I don't know. I think I would have at least trusted him at one timeout just to see what he would have done, just to see what your backcourt overall would have done. And if it didn't work, then fine, whatever. But I'm just trying to understand the logic of not trying, though.
Yeah. I would have liked to see – I didn't get to see, but, you know, I wish Vescovi could have actually finished out the game. Even with bad turnovers – I mean, they're going to happen. We've seen he can have bad turnovers. But I think even including those bad turnovers, your team is better with him on the court.
I mean, he did get put in back in the game with the four fouls just because it's like, well, I mean, you do need someone out there. I mean, you do need his playmaking ability out there.
He's the best dribbler.
But, yeah, with all of his five turnovers and his foul trouble, he was only out there 18 total minutes. And because, again, once again, being nuanced here, I have to say that a player that deserves a lot of blame for what happened, and, oh, my God, someone who should have not had the ball in his hands that late in the game where you still had a chance to make it interesting, Triple J. That kid needs help. That kid needs another full offseason to work on his ball handling issues. He's not good at it.
No.
He is absolutely not good at it. Do you feel like we might have put some pressure on him, just the fact that he was a five-star? Do you think, well, I don't want to think we expected way too much out of him because he's been disappointing. Outside the health issues, it's been a little bit of a disappointment. Saturday was rough for him. Six turnovers out there for 30 minutes, and it was rough. Unless he's taking a shot, I'm really not comfortable with the ball in his hands.
Just a spot up, just catch and shoot.
And I hope he gets better. I mean, the man has a very high basketball IQ. He's a great athlete. He's one of our best rebounders. When he is distributing well, he can find the open man. He's good at a lot of things. It's just, you want to talk about Vescovi and turnovers? No, Triple J's the one that has the big problem. He's got the big problem. So it's, again, this season's just been a mess.
Yeah, definitely.
Everything's been a mess.
Worse than everybody expected.
I'd say so. I would say so. And no one expected us to completely not lose a few steps after last season's team. But, man, you look at the way college basketball has been this season. You look at the ones that you could have really won here. And you just want to bash your head against
the wall.
Feels
like a missed opportunity.
For coaching, for health issues on your team, for just this team not having someone who wants to just be the alpha dog and just to take control of this roster from a leadership standpoint on the court, everything's just been makes you want to tear your hair out. Makes you want to rip it all out here. But Tucker, I said this before the break. Are we this upset and this frustrated? Now, not to say that we're not, because we definitely would have opened up talking just about how much that was a missed opportunity. If we don't lose to Bruce Pearl, this is a whole lot less painful.
I don't think so. I mean, it's just that extra, it stings. I mean, that's Bruce, and he's, what, how many in a row has he beat us? Is it four?
It's, hold on, 2018 TBA. No, it's at least four. It's not five. Hold on. 2018 TBA, where he came here and kicked our ass. Then it was end of the regular season last year, SEC, four in a row.
Like,
I saw the tweet about just how awful those had been. The first one was you come into Thompson Bowling Arena and just run you out of your own building.
Yeah, that one, like him winning here, that, yeah.
The next time was them denying you a split of the SEC championship with LSU. Then it was the SEC tournament championship game, and now it was an opportunity to get back on the bubble.
All of them, they all have stakes, and he's just beat us every time.
Bruce Pearl can go to hell.
Yeah.
Tucker, he can go to hell. Like, I'm tired of it. I don't care. He's never coming back. There's no use to be a Bruce Pearl apologist. You can appreciate what he did for us. It was fantastic. I look upon that era fondly. That's when I first started really getting into Tennessee basketball and college basketball as a whole. Bruce Pearl was my guy. Okay? It was fun. Lofton was fun. The Smiths were fun. Chisholm was fun. Okay? You had some fun times. But you know what? He messed up. And whatever happened behind the scenes politically, whatever it happened, he ended up choosing to go to Auburn, knowing he's going to play us every year. And, well, this man's denied us a whole, he's denied us a whole lot. And that makes people want him back. That makes people wish, oh, I wish he could be doing that here, get so much out of his players. And that may be true. Bruce Pearl is a great coach, okay? I'm not saying he's not. Does he have Rick Barnes' number? He sure as hell does.
He's starting to take away more than he ever gave.
But here's the thing. I can't watch this man do this to us and say, oh, man, I wish you had him back. Get out of here with that. Question for Bruce Pearl lovers. Like, currently, Bruce Pearl apologists. And if you're simping out there for Bruce Pearl, okay? Here's the thing. I have one question for you. What brand of cigarette do you choose to light up while you sit in the corner and watch him do his thing?
Yeah.
You just sit in the corner and watch him on the bed. That's what you do. It makes me sick. I'm tired of it. I don't care.
It's disgusting.
I don't care. He constantly does all this stuff to us. And it's just, you be mad who you want to, but he's not coming back.
Never. It's
he's
not
happening.
Coming
back.
Let go.
There's no use of it. I'm sitting here wanting Rick Barnes to get the most out of this time here with us paying what we are paying him here. And I'm hoping for the best. I can still be critical of Rick Barnes and not be so critical that I wish Bruce Pearl was here right now. Because you know why? It ain't going to happen. I'll just keep saying it. It's not going to happen. Go ahead and wish for you to go ahead and fart rainbows or something like that while you're at it.
Dream in one hand and crap in the other and see which one fills up first.
It's just annoying because it's so predictable, right?
Yep.
I knew it was going to be predictable on Twitter. I knew it was going to be predictable on the shows today. I'm sick of it. This wasn't happening when he first started Auburn and he was struggling and we were beating him.
Mm-mm.
It was like, yeah, Bruce Pearl's down there. He was our guy. It's like the ex-girlfriend thing. Yeah, we had some memories, but I hope they're doing happy now. And now that ex is coming back to light your house on fire. Key your car.
And you're like, oh, I wish we were together.
Stop simping for Bruce. Stop simping right now.
Do better.
Stop it. Overtime's back after this. 865-546-8200. Hitting a quick break. Be right back. You are listening to Fan Run Radio. Who doesn't let you down so far this year? It's just like Rick Ashley. He's never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
Who is it?
Oh, it's Tony V, man.
Oh yeah.
It's the Base Falls, the Voltellos. What a big weekend down in Texas for Tennessee baseball. They sweep. They sweep the Round Rock Classic. You opened it up on Friday, taking down Texas Tech, who was ranked number one according to multiple polls. You took down the Red Raiders in Texas. You come out the next day, you fight tooth and nail and get a win over Houston. Again, taking down another Texas team. And then you close things out yesterday, getting a big win over a ranked Stanford team as well.
Gotta love to see it.
Oh, what a way to kick off February! You got me excited over college baseball in February. Sign me the hell up.
That's a first for me, I'll be honest.
Baseball school, Tucker. Baseball school, accept it.
Go ahead.
Print the shirt.
I'm okay with it.
Print the shirt right now. You know what is frustrating, though? The fact that despite all that, I go to NCAA.com to look at the different baseball polls because college baseball, if you didn't know, uses – I'm looking at the website right now. I don't know what the main poll is. If someone out there listening knows what the main poll is in college baseball, please let me know. Because I look at D1Baseball.com, Baseball America, you have the College Baseball Writers Association, you have Collegiate Baseball, you got the Baseball RPI, which is something different, I suppose, and you have the USA Today Coaches Poll, which I don't know when the coaches start voting. If you look at some of these polls, some of them are just like last year's polls. So only a few are voting right now. Regardless, the first one that it brings you to on NCAA.com, it is today's, this week's brand new top 25. Tennessee, despite being 7-0, getting some pretty big wins this weekend, only number 24. Only 24. That's interesting.
Disrespect.
I would say so.
Major. I was really, I was expecting to be, way up. Not
top
way
20?
Up there. Yeah, definitely top 20.
You would think
20.
Top 20 at least makes sense.
At minimum.
There's a lot of great college baseball teams out there. I didn't expect to leapfrog a whole bunch, but, man, you would have thought they would have gotten, Polster's attention. At least I would have thought that. Other polls here. What is true? Oh, tell me what's true yesterday. Because, here we go. Collegiate baseball. Oh, well, this is 23. So you're in the... You're in the top 25 there.
Oh, in that poll?
In collegiate baseball. Top 25 there.
That's my official poll.
And, yeah. I think that's the only two you're ranked right now.
Well, that's the only legitimate one.
There's one poll that might have you at 19. Again, I'm so confused about all the different college baseball polls. But regardless, put some respect on Tony V's name. Come on now.
He's got these boys playing good.
You got it. I mean, hey. You got to kind of admire what Tennessee baseball did over the weekend because, hey, here's the thing. You are still without your top 10 draft pick ace, Garrett Crochet. He's still dealing with his health issues. Tony V is being very cautious about bringing him back. You still don't have your Friday number one starter out there. So to do what you've done, not at full strength, it's impressive. What Tony Vitale's been able to do with Tennessee baseball in a very short amount of time, it's pretty impressive.
Extremely impressive.
Who the hell really cared about Tennessee baseball before the last season, especially? Tony V getting everything excited. And not to disrespect any people out there that follow Tennessee baseball. I get Tennessee baseball has a decent enough history. 4 College World Series appearances. You had your last one, only 15 years ago, so it's not been long. Man, Tennessee baseball has they got the worst stadium in the SEC. The facilities are just now trying to start to get up to par with your other more consistent programs. It's really been an afterthought for a long time. It's definitely not been one of the first 10 programs you think about when you think SEC baseball. And Tony V, man.
He's getting it going.
He's got this exciting right now. I'm looking forward to if this team is going to overachieve a whole lot here. Has he done enough to make you care about Tennessee baseball, Tucker?
Absolutely, yeah. I've talked more Tennessee baseball in the past 2 years than I have my entire life. I've never been a big college baseball fan to begin with. I've just recently gotten into the MLB. But, with his hire, it kind of, I kind of turned my ear to it and was like, oh, this could, this guy looks, like a cool hire. He might do something. And then after last year, I was kind of in, and definitely so far this year, yeah, I will be paying attention to the entire season.
Do I have to give a lot of credit to John Curry? He did make this hire after all.
It was his best hire.
I mean, it was his only hire, but he ended up
top one. Top one best hire.
So thanks, John Curry. Finding Tony V. I remember back when the hire was made in 2017, a lot of people were saying, who is this? This wasn't on our short list. But immediately, you know, people were analyzing it and saying, hey, this is probably good. Young dude, of course. He's been around really good programs, one hell of a recruiter. We've seen that come to fruition, of course, with the cats he's been able to eat on this roster. Crochet, Al Solari. The list can go on and on here. So, yeah, man, already in late February here, you got us talking a lot of Tennessee baseball. You guys excited for the spring? I'm ready for it. I would like to follow a really good baseball team here.
The one thing about watching college baseball is, though, like especially like Tennessee, like I can never find where to watch the games. Like none of them are ever televised.
Well,
that's the worst part.
It's tough because you're not going to have a game that's on like cable TV until March. Which one's that going to be? It's going to be, I'm looking for it here. I'm in. Okay. Unless I skipped one.
Probably like Vandy or something like that.
It doesn't look like it's going to be until March 21st.
Wow.
Against Vanderbilt.
Okay. Yeah, that makes
home
sense.
Home against Vanderbilt. That will all be on SEC Network. And before that, you have to have either watch ESPN or you got to have ESPN Plus. Some of these are on SEC Network Plus. So, yeah, it's tough.
I would actually contemplate buying ESPN Plus to watch this baseball team.
It's not a bad deal. That's what you'll have to do. Watch them on Wednesday, but
got to support these boys.
You should be able to get them without ESPN Plus tomorrow. It says watch ESPN. We'll have coverage of tomorrow's game. They will be in action at Lindsey Nelson, taking on Northern Kentucky, then back out there Wednesday to take on UNC Asheville, and then their weekend series will be against George Washington. I don't want to overlook a lot of these teams just because college baseball is weird and anything can happen. You can mess up any time. But I'm looking at this competition here. There's a strong shot Tennessee rolls into SEC play, starting off against South Carolina on March 13th with, do I want to say undefeated record? Or maybe a loss or two?
Yeah, two.
The point
most.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'll say two at most.
Two most. Yeah. The point is they can roll into SEC play very strong. And the thing, once SEC play starts, for all that we know how good the SEC has been in football, it is like that tenfold in baseball. Mm-hmm. So if you have, I don't know, what did we finish last year? Ninth in the SEC?
Ninth or tenth?
You finished in the back half, but even though you still had a great season, you can finish like right in the middle or like right below the middle of the pack in the SEC, and you can still be a damn good baseball team capable of going all the way to Omaha. That's just how this conference is.
Yeah.
So, man, I'm looking forward to it. Shout to the baseballs having a big weekend down there in Texas. I'm sure tomorrow, weather permitting, will be a good opportunity to catch them tomorrow evening at Lindsey Nelson. I know it's Tuesday, so I think it's like a dollar hot dog night or something. They have some really really good deals on Tuesday.
That's so, pretty awesome. Dollar hot dog night.
Yeah, if you're a fan, go check that out this week, definitely. I need to make some plans to go catch a weekend game.
Yeah, I'm definitely wanting to go catch a game sometime soon.
Thing is, this damn East Tennessee weather has to cooperate first, right?
Yeah, it got to stop raining.
There ain't no way I'm going to sit in the cold rain to watch a baseball game.
No. I love them, but
it's a little too much.
A little too much.
A little too much here. Let's catch another break and wrap up hour one when we come back here. 865-546-8200 is our number to hop on here. Take a shot. We're going to close out the first hour of overtime after this. Brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer here in the Truly Hard Seltzer studios. Be sure to stop by your local grocery retailer. Pick you up a 12-pack of Truly. Get you one of those multiple variety packs. 13 different flavors of original Truly to choose from. Also find you that new Truly Lemonade. 4 flavors to choose from in that variety pack. Original mango, black cherry, and strawberry. 100 calories, less than a gram of sugar. 5% alcohol, gluten-free. Will not weigh you down. Drink what you truly want with a light, refreshing taste of Truly Hard Seltzer. As we close out hour one, I got breaking news, Tucker. I got breaking news for... Don't go to breaking news desk. Oh, you look panicked.
What is it?
I will tell you, man, and let me tell you, if you're very invested in the NFL Scouting Combine, which is about to kick off here, if you're very invested in that, if you are invested in the future of Joe Burrow.
Oh, what
careful
is this?
Here. I have breaking news. It turns out, according to sources, that Joe Burrow has been measured with 9-inch hands at the NFL Combine.
I'm not a big hand size guy. Are those small? Is that small?
For a quarterback, those are small.
I don't even know how big mine are. We need to get a measuring tape in here, compare.
Oh, no. His measurements were taken this morning at the Combine in Indianapolis. Burrow's hand size was measured at 9 inches exactly, a source confirmed to ESPN. Per ESPN stats and info, the length from pinky to thumb was tied for the smallest among first-round quarterbacks measured at the Combine since 2008. The others with that hand size were Ryan Tannehill and Jared Goff.
His draft stock's going to plummet still.
Ooh.
Maybe like a late second now.
Joe Burrow has responded.
Oh, what'd he say?
He's responded to the news. He hopped on Twitter, and he said, considering retirement after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one, Joe. That was good.
There's nothing funnier than the measurements.
Oh, always. I love them.
When the hell did quarterback hand size become a thing that mattered? I don't think I heard about people caring about it until you had Josh Allen a couple years ago with his massive hands.
And that's the only time I ever heard of it.
And people kind of made a meme out of that.
Absolutely.
But you had serious analysts who thought, hey, he's got these big hands that can grip this ball. Oh, it's going to be fantastic.
It's funny, that like whenever that movement started, his draft stock went up.
DraftJoshAllen.com, man.
Dang right.
It was a thing that happened. And now Joe Burrow, oh no, he's got small hands.
I don't know.
It's going to be a bust.
He's big bust. Cincinnati, even like they don't even want him now.
No, they're like, you know what? Nah, we're good. I think we're going to get Tua this time, Joe. Sorry about that.
Someone needs to measure Tua's hands.
Hey, Joe, it's okay. I got small hands too for a dude. I'm with you, King. I'm part of Tiny Hands Gang. I'm proud. I'm not going to hide anymore, damn it.
So you said his hand's 9 inches from thumb to pinky?
I closed the article.
Pinky, but then his hand's bigger than mine. That's not. No way. So, no, I can hold a football just fine. He's fine.
I mean, he just had the greatest season a quarterback's ever had in college football.
I think he'll be just fine.
But all of a sudden, when the football wasn't slipping out of his hands at LSU, all of a sudden now because that measurement is out here, it's just gonna fall off his hands every time he tries to take a snap.
He's gonna get in his mind. He's never even measured his hand before. He didn't know he had tiny hands. Now he's done. He's gonna get the yips.
The damn combine's so stupid. I swear, the workouts are irrelevant. The measurements are irrelevant. I swear they are.
I just want him to start doing like weird stuff, like the dizzy bat. And stuff like that, just have him spin around on a bat and then run a 40. Who can stay balanced better? Because, I mean, that's what, like, a lot of these drills are. You have a quarterback do, like, the bench press.
What are the only workouts that matter in the combine? Do you consider 40 mattering that much?
It can. I feel like you don't need, like, D linemen running the 40. You need them run, like, a 10-yard dash. Stuff like that. Which, do they even do that? I don't pay extremely.
Buddy, I don't watch the combine.
Exactly.
I just see people report about and overreact to everything.
Yeah, I just feel like the 40. Yeah, for like skill players, sure. That breakaway speed, you need to need to see how fast they are.
The combine does matter for draft stock because it just does. I'm saying that I don't know if it matters when it comes to what type of NFL player you're going to be.
No, I mean you've seen plenty of guys have terrible combines and go on to be stars. Granted, I can't name a few off the top of my head, but I know they're. Are some. I just can't think of the names in this moment.
Well, before we head to break, I want to bring this back to Tennessee here because Daryl Taylor, he will be at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis this week. However, he will not be doing any physical activity. He is recovering from an off-season surgery. However, Trying to get the – listen, yeah, when Tennessee has their pro day in April, then Daryl Taylor will be doing some physical workouts, meeting with teams and interviewing, things good. Like that. So
he can turn some heads. He'll definitely do well.
If you were wanting to watch out for any volunteer invite to the combine, Daryl Taylor will not be one that's putting out workouts. So a little bit of a news update when it comes to the really good pass rushers. So just keep that in your mind right there. Hoping for good showings from Juwan Jennings and all the others who were invited for sure, though. That's going to do it for hour one of our program, though. We got one more hour left here with you until 8 o'clock. 865-546-8200 is our number to hop on, take a shot. Hour two of overtime is coming at you after this break. Help you learn to help yourself. Look around you, all you see are sympathetic guys. Stroll.